Open works, good. Thankfully, I have a lot of great jobs.
I look over the chart.
It should be recording, see?
And we see the blinks and gray, it's counting.
I'm worried about it going too long. It's still there.
It is, doesn't work.
How it's going.
Yeah, I love it.
Good morning. We'd like to welcome you all to the Florida Folk Festival. And this is the narrative stage of the Folklife area. This is a place where we'd like to spend some time talking about important traditions in Florida. Thank you all for coming. Before I introduce our first guest here, I want to explain that James Kelly will be here in a half an hour at 10:30. Someone will be bringing him here from the apprenticeship area. I'm going to introduce a colleague who will introduce this person, but Miss Gita Raj, you can read about in the essay in the program. She's representing some valuable traditions from India with her students, and at this point, I'd also like to introduce my friend Bob Stone, a folklorist who may have a few questions for her and for her students about Indian traditions in Florida. And I may have to adjust these mics a little bit for them all. So please bear with us, but thanks for being here.
Okay. What's going to go on here is... I'm Bob Stone. I'm from Gainesville, and so is Gita. And we're going to be talking about East Indian traditions, about the Indian community in Florida, and most specifically about the dance and things that are involved with the dance. So maybe we could start, Gita, by getting... Gita Raj is her short name for people like us. Could you give us your full name?
My name is Gita Rajendra Karkera. And
where were you born?
I was born in India.
Where in India?
You want to know when? No.
Where?
Hope not. In Tamil Nadu, in Madras, which is presently called Tamil Nadu. Right across from the very famous temple, the Bragadishwara temple, where this art form was born almost 2 centuries before the birth of Christ.
And is that in the north, south of India?
It's South India.
South India. Are there generally how many cultural regions are there in India?
Indian classical dancing, because that is what I'm affiliated to, has 6 classical dances. And south, the one that I'm going to perform is Bharatanatyam, which is one of the southern classical dances of India. The other 6 classical dances of India are as per the physical boundaries of India. In the north, you have Kathak. In the east, far east, you have Manipuri. And then down south, you have Kuchipudi. To the eastern side of south is Kuchipudi in Andhra Pradesh. South in Tamil Nadu, where I come from, is Bharatanatyam. To the west of India, down south again, to the western side of India, along the coastline is Kerala, where you have Kathakali and Mohiniyattam being performed. So I consider Bharatanatyam that I will be performing. The show is not until 10:30 at the stage auditorium. We are just doing an interview because I see a lot of onlookers here. And I would like to say that if you can come down to the show, it will be nice. But this is just a little interview that we're doing for the sake of radio.
I want to stress that a big part of the dance is a symbolism. So we'll be talking about every move they do, every gesture of the fingers, every look of the eyes, even all the things you're wearing, it's all symbolic. It all has a meaning. It all has a purpose. And these symbols have come down through the centuries. So we hope to cover some of that here. So when you do see the dance, and I hope you will, that you'll have a better understanding of it instead of saying, that's nice, I wonder what they're doing.
Right. First and foremost, the jewelry that they wear is called temple jewelry, which is all gold, rubies, emeralds, and threaded and weaved by special artists called temple jewelers back home in India. They do it officially, commercially also, but then it doesn't last long with the kind of dancing we do. The our dresses is pure silk interwoven with something called yellow bright shining jari, which are silk threads with silver between them. So everything is like very expensive.
Silver or gold? Is it silver or gold?
Silver, because gold is not as malleable as silver is. Silver threads are longer lasting and they're washable also. Gold are more brittle compared to silver threads, but they're dipped in gold. Pure gold, 22 karat gold. I take pride in saying it because most of the onlookers here, they come to see the art form because it's different and pleasing to the eye. But there's a lot of hardship going in because a dancer takes 2 hours to get dressed up. First of all, Indian ladies, not very much today, but have long hair, to braid them in place, to have all the jewelries in place, because our dance form is all totally involving head to toe movements of the eyes, as Amisha will show you her eye movements, that is along with her neck. She uses the hand gestures, pataka, for example, all the five fingers together.
Holding the palm up.
All the five fingers together, pataka. Now, connotation of pataka in dance, again, is up in the sky, down on this earth, you, I, he. I don't want to listen. Go away. I don't want to look at you. Keep quiet. This is one of the gestures, just for the five fingers together, pataka. Now, you can estimate there are 28 single-handed gestures and as many double-handed gestures which have to be used in order to explain expression or promote expression. And the dance forms requires a lot of training because we sit on our feet with feet spread out like this. We bang our feet when we dance, and that's not very easy. And we do it as long hours of dancing, for an hour almost on stage, and that requires a lot of involvement of strength in the calf muscles. To develop that kind of calf muscle strength, we do a lot of posture, sitting and banging your feet, called Aramandi position, which I think Megan should demonstrate now for the audience. Take your shoes off, bitte. Aramandi, all the way down. And then you don't see it because the fan's so beautifully opening out right now, so you don't see the feet. But most of our dances come in that. The ankles are bent, the feet, knees are bent. It's the acetabulum right here in the hip area. Oh, I'm sorry, I say acetabulum because I'm a nurse, part nurse by profession, so I start using technical terms sometimes, but the hip area is bent. Body posture, the back is straight. Hands are getting into gestures, eyes are moving, and neck is moving along with the hands. And all this together forms a pure dance called Nritya, which Bharatanatyam is divided into, and Natya. Natya is expression, where expression comes in, where we do Abhinaya part, or the expression part coming in.
Let's, before we forget, can you introduce each one of your students here?
This little baby that I used to teach when she was in maybe K-5 or the first grade, she's been with me for 5 years, is Amisha Mehta, an extremely bright student at school. Of course, they're all A-graded students at school. In fact, she's a National Merit Scholar. She went her 7th grade in SAT. I think she scored one of the highest scores that I know of.
And who is that?
Sonia Keskar. And so is Megan, extremely bright in school. Plus, they are in the school bands. Amisha Mehta sings extremely well. Heard her sing.
How old is she?
She's 10 years old. Megan Keskar is 15 and Sonia is 16.
Is everyone from Gainesville?
They are all from Gainesville. Amisha Mehta is from Orlando. Oh, and she's been with me for 4 years in Orlando, whereas Sonia and Megan have been with me for a year in Gainesville. Okay. But Sonia's and Megan's aunt is a very famous dancer from Kalakshetra, the same school of dance, that part of which I have learned from. So they know they're with me because it sort of runs in their family.
Maybe we can hear a little from them on why they took this up, what it means to them. Sonia?
All right. I started learning when I was 5 years old. She was 3 from my aunt. And we started learning because our cousins are really good dancers and we wanted to be like them. So, and it really helps to keep in touch with your culture, like Indian culture, even though you live in America and you're really Americanized with school and stuff. But after school, we have dance practice, so that helps us just remember that we're still Indian even though we live here.
Were you born in America?
Yeah.
Where?
I was born in New Jersey, so is she.
How long have you been in Florida?
A long time.
Like our whole lives. Yeah.
Yeah, about like 14 years.
Okay.
You're from Jacksonville.
And maybe if you could swing the mic around to Megan. Megan, do you have anything to say about it? Why you do this? What it means to you?
I think it's just what she said, to keep in touch with our culture. And we started because of our cousins, who are their twins, and we wanted to be like them. So,
are there many East Indians in Gainesville?
East Indian dance teachers?
People.
Do have a very... almost 600 families, if I'm right, in Gainesville. Most of them are either physicians or lecturers and professors at the University of Florida.
The Cultural Association, is there?
Yeah, we do have an Indian Student Cultural Association. Also, we have the Indian Cultural and Education Society, which people have pulled in and put in together $1 million project. And I'm so proud to say it here again, because I think the more we talk about that Indian Cultural and Education Society, the better for us, because that structure just stood up there last 4 years or 5 years of hard work, led by Dr. Kesker, who's videotaping us right now, is one of them who have gone door to door collecting funds for that. And I know for sure that it is just because of people like him that we have a structure enormous. It's a beautiful stage, and I think I could call it like a civic center stage, that worthy. And all that is with a very 600 families are pulling together to have that.
What are some of the things that association is doing?
The association is promoting free scholarship. The Intercultural and Education Society is promoting free scholarships for students who come from India to do their masters in this country, and help them financially, provide them accommodation, promote artists like us, because we were there on the inaugural day of the show, and we were very proud to be part of that. But the dance teachers in Indian there are also very many dance teachers around who do promote culture as equally as I do in and around Florida.
Are there musicians locally?
Yes. We, in fact, just had a show last year, a month ago, where we put in live music exactly in the fashion that we do it in India. We have live musicians, we trained them, we took material from nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. And then had words, I understood the words, the meanings of that, set them to tunes, into melodies with the help of the University of Florida music group, Dr. Larry Crook for that matter, you know him. And we had that brought into life here in America, where 40 years ago we were just performing in temples of India. We wouldn't even dream to come to this country and do it here.
So that was a sort of a groundbreaking performance.
That was, for me it was, in a way, because I had most of the input, so I felt very great doing it.
Uh-huh. So you've adapted some of the older traditions to your new situation then?
It's the new situations in the sense that children from India are here who are very much into, when they're doing their masters at school, they are very much into dancing and singing, but they do not have the time yet. So as an adult, I'm a matured adult, being in this field for quite some time, I thought if I could get them involved in some way or the other to promote our culture, it would be nice.
Great.
That's one reason why that program, in fact, that when we were rehearsing in the University of Florida corridor, I met this gentleman there. And he was watching me teach Vinod and Vasu, Vinod and Kavita some steps. And he said he wanted to have us for the show.
You choreographed the whole...
With the input of the children. Once these children are capable of choreographing. In fact, little Amisha here is choreographing as Swarajati, that you will see as one of the dances that we'll be performing for the next group that she is. And those children there are 16, 18 years old, but she's choreographing an item for them.
Beautiful. Let's go back a little bit, maybe just quickly, if you could tell us how you got started dancing Gita and how you learned who some of your teachers were, and maybe you could even tell us, I know you've won some awards and received some honors.
Oh, yes, yeah, I do. But then during my time, there weren't many competition. Now there are plenty of competition. So those days when I won awards, it was, I think, I should, you might say I'm modest, but at that time it was easier than today. I learned dancing because I watched them dance in the temples of India at the time where I lived, and I started when I was 3 or 4 years old, getting into temple and dancing just to have a free dinner, basically. I liked the food more than I liked the dance part of it. But people liked me because they thought I was very short in the... Ever since I know myself, I've not been very tall. And I looked younger than my age always, like I always did. So people thought I was younger, and they appreciated at the time, and they kept appreciating for a certain period of time till I won the inter-schools at the time. Inter-schools led me to intercollegiate. My pictures in the papers made me do inter-universities. Then I won the national talent. That is, you should be able to play an instrument, you should be able to sing, you should be able to dance, perform, you should be able to paint and write poetry. One of the 5 qualifications I had to be a national talent. And then won Government of India scholarships. That brought me a lot of fame. I got into Films Division of India, not the film industry, but Films Division, where documentary films are presented just like this that we're doing. Mm-hmm. A lot of radio shows, a lot of television shows. And then 1990, when I came down to Florida, okay, I should also say a little about the dance by itself. Indian dancing was done in the temples. Ever since India's freedom and independence, we have had this style of dancing come out to the local people. Television did a lot of improvement. It did a lot of harm also, but it did a lot of improvement. And then in the 90s, when I came down to Ocala, to Orlando here to sightsee the Disney World, I had a performance for a family, and I did as a dance number. In regular sari, not dressed up like this, but in a regular sari. And Mary Bridget, I think her name is, Ocala Civic Theater's manager at then, she saw me and she wanted a full hour performance at the Civic Center. That brought me to Appleton Museum, to Central Florida Community College, where I graduated as a registered nurse, then to University of Florida, where I did my master's in microbiology, along with my school and dancing. To today here. Okay. This was my aim, to reach this place, and I've reached it finally.
Well, we're really glad to have you here. Can you tell us a little bit about the dances that you're going to be doing at 10:30?
Okay. The couple of items that we will be doing is a little baby, I used to call her baby Amisha, but she's grown out to be a little girl now. We'll be presenting a couple of numbers, one pure classical in style, and one... typical folk, because I wanted to end it with a folk thing in mind, you know. And Megan and Keskar will do rhythmic footwork intertwined with hand gestures. Sonia and Megan? Megan. Right? I got your names right?
Yeah, but you said Keskar. Megan.
Nogan, Megan and Keskar. I always involve Dr. Keskar, I'm sorry. Sonia and Megan will perform pure classical dancing has rigorous footwork. Now, when you see them dance, you would know that it is a little different piece and a difficult piece. But you should also know that they've been with me for a year. And Amisha has done that almost a long time ago. What they're doing now has been done by Amisha a long time ago. So she is sort of like a senior to her in the art. Because in art, you always have talent as seniority and never the age as being senior.
How about these markings on your hands? I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about the red markings on your fingers and okay. The dot in your palm.
The forehead. Okay, the Indians, by nature, we all, as young girls and as married women, we have a dot on our forehead to say, here, I'm married, or I'm happy as a girl. But the red dot forehead was formerly from seeds of plants that were crushed into and then applied during the day of your wedding by your husband. And it stayed there after that as kumkum, or something very auspicious and holy. What I was taught by my great guru, who's no more, the first guru in my life, was that the soul in a person's body stays somewhere around the forehead. And when you apply something to it, it shows that I respect him in my body. So in the morning when we have dance lessons, we used to have a shower and come back and take the kumkum from the gurus and apply it to our forehead, saying, I worship the soul that I have in my body. I respect him. Like when we dance, we touch the feet of... We go around and touch Mother Earth. Now, Indians, like Greeks, believe in everything as the gods and goddesses associated with strengths, like goddess of wisdom, god of wisdom. Mother Earth bearing us, because She's mother of patience for us. She can bear anything on it. So we're going to dance on her, so we pray to her also during our dance.
How about the markings on
the markings on your is hands? In India we have a tree. I think it's sort of in the conditioners that you American ladies have in the shampoo called henna. You've heard of it? Henna conditioners? It's a plant ingredient. It's natural. It's been, Park Davis and Estee Lauder has henna in their combinations. It's a green leaf which ground and applied overnight leaves you with red markings. You will have a lady here doing mehendi. It's called mehendi, and she is here representing in the folk. She will be doing it. It's like a tattoo that does not go away for a month. We used to have that as, these are one of the five signs of marriage, the kunkuma, the little chain that we have. We don't have rings as much now, is more a fashion that to have a wedding ring, but we have chains in which we have our husbands from their family. We have a symbol that comes in from the husband's side as one of the married signs. So is mehendi, which again gives a finish to the hand. If my hand had, I intentionally didn't apply on the right and did it on the left to show you, if I do this gestures, they are so identical, but this hand is better seen from a distance. Right? You agree with me? Then. So this is like a little nail polish kind of a deal to make your nails look pretty. This makes the entire hand look pretty.
And you're using, instead of henna, you're using a magic marker.
I'm using
today.
Because necessity is the mother of invention. I thought, why not?
That won't come off for quite a while, will it?
Yeah, but then we know what takes it off, the 407 something.
Okay, so you've adapted that to your... Yeah. And you also mark your feet, do you?
We mark our feet to give it a finish. And from far, because most of our dancers' feet, these children have excellent feet compared to ours. We used to dance on concrete, so our feet have got a lot of holes and crevices, and because of constant bagging, it's like a yard man's foot, but it's not as bad because my foot is not, I'm a nurse, so it's not as bad. But to give it an end, this is done also as a decorative measure, basically.
Is there a, you know, one thing that strikes me when I watch a dancing is it must be very hard on your feet. Is there a point in a dancer's life in which you have to say you can't do it anymore because it's your body's starting to...
Well, I'm 48 and I don't want to give it away, so I don't know when it would be.
That's incredible.
I hope that doesn't come. Hope death takes me far before I have to stop dancing. It really kills me to think I would not be able to perform, but I will definitely hold art workshops as far as sitting and teaching is concerned, because I don't want to.
Is that typically what happens when a dancer can no longer dance that they teach?
For an artist, if an artist can't paint no more, he's going to paint on the bathroom mirror when he comes out, because the exhaust and the humidity sort of covers up and makes a perfect canvas. Most of you must have done it. At least say, I love you, Mom, on it sometimes, you know? I do that as an artist. As a painter, I can't paint no more because of other shortage of time, and I come out. Every day is a new scene in the bathroom mirror. So I think no artist should stop what he likes doing.
How many students do you have in Gainesville?
Gainesville, I have 11 or 12 only right now, because I just moved 4 months ago and I've been teaching on and off for a year. Uh-huh. But you see the talent. I think I choose my students by the talent and not just have a commercially beneficial class. But Orlando, I have close to 28 children, and I think most of them, Mrs. Mehta is right here, she'll agree that they are very, very into dancing. Most of my children are very dedicated.
Great.
Isn't that true, Amisha?
Yeah.
Let's talk a little more about the costumes. Is there any symbolism to the colors, or reason that you choose certain colors, or how about the nature of the designs on the
The designs,
decoration?
We have bordered saris to enhance, but I think as a youngster when I danced too, we did have handloom saris. Indian handlooms are, you know, we used to have those looms that we used to make saris in. These borders used to come as a side and the border, very close to the sticks that you push them and you pull them. So this used to end on that. I think that sort of settled down now. It's a fashion now that even when modern technology has achieved, made such a progress in material, we still kept up to the older tradition of having that border.
How about the jewelry? How about the headpieces?
Okay, mine is different from Amisha's. Amisha's, what she's wearing is for a youngster up to 13, 14 years of age. And what they're wearing is the traditional temple jewelry. I, as a teacher, I don't intend doing a lot of rigorous dancing today because the children are going to be involved more. I've just got a simple hair ornament, I call this. Talachutti, it's called. But the hair is braided and the flowers are all around the hair. And basically, the makeup is very similar to what you wear as Indian folk.
What are these little the beads the around
flowers.
The top?
Flowers.
Okay, knot.
Flowers again is one of the signs of womanhood in India, and we have plenty of flowers. India, like tropical, being very close to Floridian type of climate. In fact, we are successfully, all of us here, all three families that I'm with, are growing these flowers here in our country. But this is this is paper.
Right. And what
but
kind of flowers
jasmine.
Are they?
These are jasmines and kanakambar, we call it. The orange color flowers. I've seen both of them in Walmart, Kmart, available as jasmine. Both kinds are available. But then we do it, we travel so widely, we can't carry our plants around with us for fresh flowers.
Right.
So we make sure that we have them in paper.
How about we're jumping around here, but one thing that strikes me watching the dance is the eye gestures. Are there a number of certain eye gestures,
movements.
Eye movements that you do?
We have 9 expressions with which eyes move.
I know it won't come across on the tape, but could you do each one and
okay.
tell us
I
what they are?
I can show you love, like this is love. I love my bird. That's love. But I'm upset with my bird, and I saw you. That is anger, sort of not anger yet, but this is like, open your mouth. What do you got in your mouth? And this is, no, mommy, I don't have anything. I swear, I'm not eating mud. I didn't even touch mud. Okay, this is fear. And this is, I didn't expect this for my birthday. Okay, this is Ashcharya. And this, I don't want to wang now and spoil my mascara or whatever I have got in my eyes. But this is crying, tears. Mm-hmm. And this is smile, but this is, look at you. I'm sorry saying it. I'm not using you as a model. I should take the pole then. Look at you. You must be some sort, whatever. I am right now. I'm sorry. Excuse me. But that's the kind of the feelings come with the eyes. So narrowing and opening or widening of our eyes are usually associated with expressions.
So to summarize, the hand movements and of course the gestures of the body and the eye movements are every bit as important, if not even more important, than what you're doing with your feet.
Right.
What we would normally think of as dance. There's a lot more going on.
Actually, in Bharatanatyam, what we are going to present, we have got pure dance and expressions. They are two different entities altogether. The nritya, or the pure dance, has eye, neck movements, hand movements, or movements like this. The footwork, you'll see different feet gestures. That does not involve abhinaya or expressions. But when we do a part of abhinaya or expressions, we do not use those hand gestures. We don't say, you come here. You don't do that kind. That is done in pure dance. I would say you come here with eyes. Or using you come here. Will you come here? Please come here. Please. So this is the way we do it with expressions, using the same hand gestures.
We just have another minute or two. The stories that you tell with your dance, are they stories like we might sing in a song every day, or do they go back in history? What are they generally about?
It's all spiritually involved. Everything in India is involved with mythology and Hinduism. Most of the dances that I choose to dance, except for the contemporary ones that I do to please an audience, other than that, when I'm there, because sometimes you have to give and take. If you have an audience that is wanting to do something contemporary, like we did something on black the last month, and we involved fear, death associated with black. Black as in color black. Our Lord Krishna was black. So we had things associated with black as a contemporary piece, which we had to do to improvise society sometimes. So that was one of our issues. But other than that, most of our issues are typical mythological characters. Lord Ganesha, Lord Shiva, the god of dance, as Nataraja, his wife Parvati, his son Ganesha, the god of wisdom, his other son Kartikeya, whom little Amisha will do a dance on, the six-faced god, he rides on a peacock. All Indian gods have a peacock. They have a weapon in their hands for protection. And so that is very symbolic to us, and we will portray all that in our dances when we do.
Okay, we have to wrap up now. You guys have a dance to do on another stage, right? I want to thank you very much for talking with us, sharing this time with us, and we're really glad you're here, and we look forward to seeing your dance. How many days are you going to be here?
I think just today, because we were late in responding, or we were late in receiving information, so we didn't have enough time to decide, and I think next year we'll be here all 3 days.
How many performances are you doing today?
We'll be doing six items altogether, but half an hour.
How many different time slots?
No, we are just doing 10:30, because we have another show tonight that I have to represent in Disney, so I have to be there.
Don't miss it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks.
I'd like to remind you all that Ms. Raj and her students will be at 11 o'clock, that's only a half an hour from now, on the wooden, perhaps it's 11:30, I stand corrected, very soon, on the Folklife Performance Stage, which is the wooden dance floor, an excellent place for dance, and I'd like to thank you so very much for talking about this Indian American tradition. We need a moment to switch gears here. I'd like to say who sponsors this event. The Florida Folk Festival is co-sponsored by the Florida Department of State, Division of Historical Resources, whose headquarters are in the R.A. Gray Building. We're, many of us here, from two separate bureaus there. The Museum of Florida History, we urge you to come visit, and the Bureau of Historic Preservation. Our next performer on this narrative stage is going to be James Kelly, who you can read about in the apprenticeship essay, and he'll be demonstrating in the apprenticeship area with his apprentices. Ms. Raj, who you just heard, and her students are only here for today and will be demonstrating their dances from India on the wooden dance floor. Now, the festival, as I said, is co-sponsored. It's co-sponsored by the Florida Division of Environmental Protection, the Florida Park Service. Those are the people in the green uniforms. If for some reason something is happening and you lose a child, if there's a lost child, if you find a child, anybody with a radio can pass a crucial message like that. Now, I have a radio as a stage manager that gets me in touch with Florida Department of State people. The Park Service people have radios and are prepared for emergencies. I'm going to see if I need to fix these microphones, and then I'll make an introduction. Just one moment. James Kelly, who's visiting and demonstrating in the apprenticeship area. I'm going to turn this informal interview, actually this is as formal as we get. We leave these in the Department of State Archives. And Ms. Raj, I've got a question for you before you, I'll find you. I'll find you there. We are depositing these in the Florida State Archives. That's the question I have for her. However, my colleague here to my left is Jane Scott, who has been a student of Irish fiddling. She works with her husband in a music store. She's also been a music educator for 20 or more years. She's from the Tallahassee area. I'm a big fan. I'm going to turn this over to James Kelly and Jane Scott.
Thank you. James, as you heard, is over in the apprentice area, which if you left from here and you walked straight over past the tower, because some people were saying they didn't know where it was, there are a group of little houses that are over there, and James is in cabin one, and he would love to have you come over and hear and ask more questions if you're interested. Also, he'll tell us later to... in the interview where he's going to be playing, so you'll know where else you can go to hear him play. And James was born in Dublin, I believe someone has told me, and I heard him say today, and He came over to the States in the 70s, I believe, and married a Miami girl and is living in Miami, and we're really lucky to have him in Florida. And I wanted James to start off by telling us some of his early influences with his fiddling, because his father, John Kelly, is a great fiddler.
My early fiddle influences? Well, a lot of people, as Jane said there, my father, I learned my fiddle playing from my father and my family. We had four brothers and one sister with the family members and my father and mother, so we had six fiddlers in my family growing up, and we all played music.
Were you the youngest?
I was the youngest, yeah.
I believe I heard you say at one time that you remember sitting in your father's lap, mm-hmm. and playing, and he would take your hand and show you how to do your bow and things like that.
Yeah, because I couldn't play. I was too young, but he'd sing the music to me, and he'd put his hand over my right hand and wrap my hand around the bow and wrap my left hand around the neck of the instrument and just sing the song to me. We'd get a rhythm going, he'd tap his foot up and down, and he'd lift his leg off the ground, and he'd sing the songs to me. So that's kind of my earliest memory of playing the fiddle, although I couldn't actually play. Just hearing the sounds made a real impression on me, you know.
Which area in Ireland is your father from?
He was from a county called County Clare over in the west.
How has the playing of Clare influenced your fiddling?
Well, Ireland is divided up into four provinces, and Clare is a county in one of those provinces in the west, and there are many, many, many fine fiddlers from that county, and of course growing up I would have travelled down to Clare often and heard the players playing, and also they would have come to visit us in Dublin, so there'd be a major influence on their styles, although I was born in the city.
Right. I know Ed Keeney was the master Irish fiddler last year that I studied with, and he's from Donegal. And his style is not very ornamented, and it's very, very fast. And I know your style, your ornamentation is just I consider it perfect. It's just so, so pristine. It's just so finely done. It's almost...
Write that down now. Write it down.
But it's not classical in nature. Some of the ornamentation in the Irish music is sort of born maybe out of Baroque. It borrows from Baroque, but it doesn't... It takes it even further, and it's very individualistic. But the styles from the different provinces are different. Like in the north, it's faster. And how's the style in Sligo different from Donegal?
It's bouncier. The Donegal style is a little bit more staccato in a general sense, and the Sligo style is more bouncier with different kinds of ornamentation, and the Clare style is a bit more even flowing with a lot of ornamentation.
So where do you fall in the styles? How would you describe
them? I fall in everywhere, I suppose, at this stage. Influence from all the different counties.
Would you say that Sligo and Clare were two of your bigger influences?
Probably.
Well, why don't you start and play us a tune? Thank you.
very much. Thank you. How many fiddlers do we have in the audience today? I know we have two in the front three. Four fiddlers. Well, two of the main kind of ornaments that I'm using there, and you probably know what these are already. Sorry? Different kinds. I'm using rolls. Do you all know what a roll is?
Demonstrate a roll.
Okay. Well, a roll, basically speaking, is five notes, and you ornament on the first note, usually, and... just for the benefit of today, you can either make the notes of equal time value, or you can hold the first note and make it long. So it sounds something like this. As opposed to... it's just a motion you do, you know, a sequence of notes. In that case there, I played an E, I played a G, I played an E again, open string, and an E. And you either do it on an up bow or on the down bow. And when you play it fast, it sounds a little bit different. And the other thing are bow triplets, which are basically two notes of introduction and a triplet. And those five notes we call a treble. So a treble are two notes of introduction and a triplet. And the reason why the two notes of introduction are so important, not just in this music, in fact, but in, let's say, Cape Breton traditional music or French-Canadian music or Scottish music, would be the fact that it's difficult to do the triplets just on their own. So you need to set yourself up bowing-wise. So, for example, I may do something like this. That's my notes of introduction there. That's the triplet. And it would be two 16s and an 8 for benefit of people who read. So, sound like this. Put it into a tune.
I've heard some people call that a treble.
Yeah.
Because I think, explain the difference between a treble and a triplet.
Well, in other
because
words,
they can be different.
Well, a triplet itself would be specifically a triplet, right? Would consist of three notes, and what we call a treble, it consists of five notes, which are the two notes of introduction plus the triplet.
Oh, okay.
So that's what a treble is.
Right, all right. And a treble is always the same note. It's like if it's on an E, it's always, all those notes are going to be on E, whereas a triplet is like a running up higher, usually?
Well, there's different kinds. I mean, you can do this. That's a triplet. Or, you know, that stuff. That's another kind, and then that one. Just depends. No, it just depends on which one you want to do.
Right. I've heard of cuts too.
Well, a cut is a triplet. In fact, it's a treble, is what it is, and they call it cuts up in Cape Breton.
Can you explain what you mean by ornamentation? So we could hear. I mean, can you explain what it means?
Well, you know, you have a basic melody, let's say. Bonnie Kate, for instance. By the way, can you hear me when I talk? You can. Bonnie Kate, let's say, would be it's a reel, and it's a reel that comes from Scotland, but we play it, it's in the Irish repertoire. And then the idea is to take the basic setting of the dance tune and then to build on that, so you improvise. And you improvise it. You improvise in the tune, you use different ideas, and one of the ideas would be, for instance, to add extra notes which kind of enhance the melody without taking from the melody. And the other thing that you would do, of course, is you'd use a lot of ornamentation. So let me demonstrate, for instance, Bonnie Kate. This would be kind of a bare bones Bonnie Kate. I'll play it slow. And that's two A's there, and you just simply play it like that. The second part. Okay, now that's awful bare, you know, so you have to start dressing it up a little bit, so to speak. So you might do, I'll play it straight, and I'll do one setting with ornamentation. You know, whatever ideas come to mind. So I'm using a whole variety of ornamentation, and what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to really help the melody along. And hopefully make it interesting for the listener as well. You don't necessarily know what's coming next.
Yes.
And neither do I, so...
We have about 5 minutes left, he said. So would you play him another really nice...
I'll just play one more piece of music for you then. Thanks for listening. And as Jane said there, we are over at the... In building one over at the apprenticeship area. And if there's any fiddlers in the audience you want to stop by sometime today, you're quite welcome, or tomorrow, whatever. I have some CDs. I don't have any. Oh, maybe I have a tape or two. I have a couple of CDs and tapes with me as well. Jane has a CD here for sale, and I'll have them on this weekend also. So what would you like to hear now? Something depressingly slow, or something fast, or something in the middle?
Something happy.
Yes, we have a vote in Ireland today about a new peace agreement that they made in Northern Ireland. So We'll have to send some good vibrations, or we'll need the Beach Boys to send some good vibrations over there. Just play a reel.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Would you tell us where you're going to, where else you're going to be performing? Do you know some of the times so you can tell them? I think tonight.
James's presence has been requested at the performance stage. If I could put you on the rug. Tina Bukowalis, our mutual friend and folklife coordinator, has just asked James to play a little bit at the performance stage dance floor. Is that all right? I can. Tara, our volunteer on the golf cart, can take you there. But would you give him a further round of applause? And also, I'm sure he's very interested in promoting this wonderful new recording. I also know that we can make it available through the museum's shop in Tallahassee, through the Gordon Friends Stringy. Of Florida Folk tent here, and other venues like that. So I urge you to continue to support James Kelly and his fiddling.
That's the wonderful thing about this festival is that you actually get to play golf during the day. It's great.
Tina requested James at the performance to dance floor, and Tara is going to take a break.
For a moment. But our next discussant, our next guest, is also from the folklife area. And she's been demonstrating her craft, which the lovely assistant Bobby Joe Finer has just brought to the stage here. This is a batik tradition. And with me to discuss it is Shalini Tandor. And I'm going to move the microphones around a little bit and perhaps continue to speak with her myself. So give us one moment. Ms. Tandor, let me just move the mics a little bit. Would you like to sit or stand? I'd almost prefer to sit.
Okay, well, we'll sit down.
I hope to...
Call me Shalini, my first name.
Yes, ma'am, Shalini. And would you like to be in this seat or this one?
Whichever works for you.
How about this one?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, we got it.
You gotta be that close.
Let me go get the essay.
So you guys are going to learn?
They think it's fun.
Volume down.
Sorry.
That's all right. This sort of thing happens with sound systems. In your program booklet, there's an essay and some photographs. And under the tent over there, there are some craft demonstrators. With me is one of those demonstrators from Florida. And her name is Shalini Tandon. Shalini.
That's
I'm pronouncing it correctly?
You got it.
She's demonstrating her batik, and she's brought a sample. I want to ask her a little bit about how she began to do this. First of all, tell me where you're living now. And
I live in Orlando.
Uh-huh. And how long have you lived there?
For the last 20 years, lived in Orlando. And I was born in India, moved to Orlando, America rather, in 1973.
Do you have family here?
Mm-hmm. I have my parents living with me, my sister and all.
Tell me a little bit about East Indian batik.
Well, batik, basically, it's a wax-resist process. Wherever you don't want paint, just put wax on it. That is the simplest thing. But other than that, it can be very complicated also, because you have to know what you're going to do, where you want what color, and it's a lengthy process because you have to keep covering the colors with wax, whatever you want to save, and going to the next color. It takes a long time, a lot of patience, which I don't have, but I don't know how.
How did you learn?
Well, I learned back in India. I did my bachelor's with fine arts. So I learned it there. And then when I came here, I developed my own technique, which is a lot more contemporary and faster than normal way of doing it, and you can do it inside because here everything is done in air-conditioned rooms. Mm-hmm. There we work outside when we do things like that because dyes have a lot of chemicals and all that.
I'm going to ask you all for some questions. If you have questions for Ms. Tandon, think of the art you've done in classes. But we're interested in this for the historical record so that we can learn and continue to learn about your work and the work of batik artists in Florida, and especially traditional arts. In art school, were there teachers who emphasized folk traditions or Hindu traditions or family traditions? What kind of classes and what kind of styles?
It's mostly very conventional traditional styles. Mm-hmm. And if you see real Indian batiks, most of them are done as like you will see the religious pictures in it, or just like portraits and all that, or very conventional paintings depicting the Indian life and mostly folk life.
Why don't you show off this piece you've brought with and tell us a little bit about your work with this piece of batik, which you're holding up as an illustration. Would you like me to hold it?
Sure. You can hold it. This piece is, again, you can see it's very contemporary, even though it's a landscape of like a village, but it does show the technique. Same technique is still the same. I've just made it faster because I end up doing the whole design in wax at one time and then feed the colors. And then if I still want to do more, then I'll go back and color, cover the colors with wax and go ahead and do it. But this is a very contemporary styling. It's a mixture of, I think it has a little of realism mixed with contemporary, more realism sort of thing. But then there are other things I do which are way out. Not very abstract, but way out for conventional batik.
Tell a little bit about your other work.
Well, I think some of the work I've done, like a lot of figures in it and a lot of nude figures and sort of, people always tease me, you have to do some porno work. I said, no, it's not porno, it's just art. That's basically what it is.
Do they have traditional meanings, or is this imagery that you find particularly?
I think most of it is imagery. Mm-hmm. In olden times, it was used like the clothes were done in batik, and it was used for royalties and other people only. But now it's become more of fashion. They do it of different kinds and on different pieces of fabric. Mostly it was done on cotton at that time. Only for royalty it was done for silks and all that. Now silk is in wide use. I use mostly silk because I like it. So,
Have you been able to do this for a living in Orlando?
Are you kidding?
No?
No, Orlando has Mickey Mouse culture.
Yeah.
So we don't have other culture there. But yes, you know, it's pretty popular. I do a class every Saturday. And I have like almost 8 to 10 people all the time.
And where do you teach?
I work with City of Orlando part-time and teach the class for a recreation department. So they have in their community centers. And that's where I teach the classes.
Who are some of your students? Do they come from all over Orlando?
Almost, yes. Most of them are adults and seniors. Mm-hmm. They are the ones who have the time and patience to do this. Young kids don't have the time and patience for it. But it is very relaxing art.
Tell me a little bit about your other work and your other family and the community in Orlando.
If you talk about just Indian community, there's a large Indian community, mm-hmm. a lot of professionals. Orlando has a lot of business community also because of having Disney and gift shops and other things. My father is a physician, nothing to do with art, surgeon. And I live at home. He's the one who brought us all here, basically. And then I still work with medicine. I work with orthopedic surgeons. But when I have time, I do the artwork, which I have to take out all my orthopedic surgery frustrations or medical frustrations. Work frustrations, and that works. It's really relaxing and helps.
Well, I find a lot of healthcare professionals have been talking about their art and their and their work here. Are there other
subjects for batik? And are there Florida batik artists? Do you see the tradition changing?
People are learning. A lot of people are doing batik. Again, most of them you will find they were doing the conventional way of doing it. There's a lot of people in this country who are doing batik now. Lot means, I won't say like thousands of them. Still, maybe hundreds of them. But I still haven't found somebody who uses exactly the same modified technique that I do. I'm sure there are. I can't say there aren't. But I haven't met anybody. But I have met a lot of people who are doing silk painting, which they don't use wax. They use chemical resist and do that.
Some of them are selling crafts here and have in the past. There's a woman in the dance community named Vasanto who did silk resist, and she's given it up for the time being. Can you tell a little bit more about how you adapted and your tradition that you mentioned, your specific process?
Well, when I came in 70s and I was still doing the conventional way of little bit in a batik, then I realized if you really see in the market, it was saturated because a lot of imported material was coming from India. You could see them sold everywhere. Here a lot of pieces of same conventional style, Indian style paintings are there. Then I said, something different has to be done. And I started, well, it took me almost 10 years to get to a point that, yeah, I really like it. I can show it now. So it took me a long time. It was fun.
And are there galleries that you appreciate for exhibiting batik or other examples of Indian art in the United States?
Lot of them. Indian art is, some places are getting very popular, especially like in California, New York. I think in our area, probably Miami has some. I have some pieces in Orlando galleries, but not that much. Again, Orlando doesn't sell that much art. But Miami and Tampa, I've heard a lot of artwork they have, different multiple kinds. So, they keep all kinds of. I've sent my work for shows, not necessarily I've sold a lot, but it's been exposed. And the main thing is people don't know how it's done. It's fascinating for people to watch when you do it. They just cannot figure out how it's done.
Well, it looks almost like what I've heard of a mandala. It looks almost like an image for meditation.
Well, I think that's some of the... I've heard other people tell me that your color schemes and your paintings are more like very, spiritual sort of thing. But I work mostly from nature. So, nature, right now I was doing something, showing them. I was doing trees. That's what I like to do, mostly nature stuff. So I guess that is more spiritual. Mm-hmm. Get your energy from nature. I believe in it. I don't know.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Once again, are there Indian natural elements? I guess I'm trying to ask... Are there other survivals of Indian tradition in the imagery?
Oh, yes. I do some of it. I have a couple pieces I brought them here that are very Indian. I mean, if you look at it and if you know anything about India, you can just pick it. It has 100% Indian theme, even though it's not 100% conventional, but it is a theme, the color schemes. And, in India, they use very bright colors. Even they wear very bright colors. Everything is bright. And that's the kind of colors I use. There is a difference. You can see the difference. Well, a lot of people tell me, even in my contemporary pieces, that they can pick, you have the Indian background. I don't know how, but they tell me. So.
Well, you'll be demonstrating in the Folklife area.
For next 3 days.
And you've brought some other pieces with you there?
They are there. And the people should come by and see them.
I'm sure I will. I hope that we can stay in touch between us at the Museum of Florida History and your work. I mean, there may be more we can learn about batik in Florida.
I would like to keep some pieces there if they would allow me to, even for educational pieces, they would like to keep some.
You'd be very interested.
Yeah, I would give them. I would love to do that.
and particularly interested in staying in touch with you as you continue to teach as well.
I think I was talking to Tina as I was talking, maybe, you know, I should, if they would like it, I would come to schools and give workshops if they would like to, because I do that during, around the Orlando area, I do mm-hmm. workshops and all. So
there are teachers here in the park who are taking an in-service, and there are some examples that the programs in folk arts and education continue on mm-hmm. small basis like that, but I'm sure that over time they'll continue to recommend you, and some of the teachers from this spot will continue to be interested in your work as
some
well.
Some of the teachers have come to me and they wanted to know how it's done, so I have written up something and there's a little flyer sort of thing and they can pick up. And yeah, I would love to do that. Anytime.
There's an art education department at the University of Central Florida. Have mm-hmm. you worked with them?
No, I haven't.
There's an art teacher here named Kristen Congdon from mm-hmm. that program, who's mm-hmm. She was the president of the Florida Folklore Society, and I know she'll be fascinated by your work and be interested.
I've heard she's coming. I haven't met her yet. I'd love to meet her.
There's a lot of people who are interested in these traditions, and we get to learn about them at the folk festival on stages mm-hmm. like this. Whether we have an audience or not, we're interested for posterity in you right. and your tradition.
Well, you know, once you have it on the tape, you can always talk
That's
to
exactly
people and
it.
Listen to the...
I hope I'll be able yeah. to transcribe
oh,
the tape.
Oh, sure. You know, if you have a problem, I'll do it again. I would love people to learn.
Chances are good.
Okay.
The Indian Cultural Festival in Tampa.
They have a lot of Indian food, Indian clothes, Indian dances. They have lots of performance and competition. Performance competition, mostly dances. And I've heard, I haven't been there because every time it's there, I'm doing something else. Excuse me. But I've heard it is an excellent festival. Long time ago, we used to do in Orlando too, but, you know, it just didn't work. So we ended up, you know, just leaving it at that. But Tampa Festival, I've heard, is very nice. I haven't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, they did? Oh, I need to go see that. Yeah, there's a lot of Indians in Gainesville. Well, I didn't know anything about that.
We have a Hindu church in Tallahassee, but I'm not sure about specifically Indian organizations within our town as well. Just because this class has just arrived, I want to repeat some of the information by way of introduction. I'm a folklorist just working this stage as a stage manager. To my left, though, is Shalini Tandon, who's demonstrating in the Folklife area. She's from Orlando, and this is an example of her work as an artist with batik from India. But she's lived in Orlando for more than 20 years. And we're asking her a little bit about her work. And you can keep seeing her work there under that crafts demonstration tent. But you also may have a question or two yourselves about this kind of visual art, which is called batik. And just to repeat for the benefit of these children, can you tell us what batik and what kind of art this is, Ms. Tandon?
Batik is a wax resist process. What
wax.
You do is you cover the areas that you don't want to color with hot wax and then color the other areas. Then you repeat the process with different colors and it just comes out to be a nice design. Then you have to take the wax out. We iron it out between two pieces of paper, or you can dry clean it. That's the easy way out. And it works. You get a nice piece of fabric.
What kinds of fabrics and what kinds of examples of pieces do you like to do best?
Well, I like to work on silk. But cotton takes the colors a lot better than silk because it's vibrant. It's, you know, it's natural fiber. It takes the colors better. But anything non-polyester works better. Polyester doesn't take the dyes. Even though there are some dyes available for polyester, it's not the same thing.
And are there great artists? You learned in college, did you not? Did you
mm-hmm.
learn? Did you do batik before you entered college?
Sort of, like a hobby sake, you know, once in a while, not mm-hmm. that much.
But when you were learning as a hobby, who were your teachers then?
You know, that was mostly by observation. Mm-hmm. I really didn't have a teacher. Mm-hmm. I just like to do it. Since I've been a kid, I've been in art. I started basically with watercolor and oils.
And how old were you when you started doing art with watercolors and oils?
15 years old.
Not well, you've got a few years on you guys.
It's 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What kinds of art were the watercolors and oils? What sort of subjects?
Mostly landscapes. I've always done mostly landscapes.
And were you in Orlando at that time?
No, I was in India. And I finished college in India before I came here.
What town in India, and what was the college or university?
I was born in Lucknow, but I went to college in Kanpur, which is 50 miles away from the north part of it. And I went to Kanpur University. Mm-hmm. They had a college there, and that's where I learned.
Can you tell these children a little bit about what makes Indian traditions, what India was like over there, and what sort of environment those cities?
A beautiful country. It's very complicated culture. We have like 14 or 15 languages written and spoken different. I only speak one. I don't know the other languages in India. We have to study English from kindergarten with one R language because we can't communicate with other people if we don't. And we have like over 400 dialects plus those languages. We have every religion you can think of in the world is in India. And if you go to big city, they are as cosmopolitan as any other city in this country. But it's still very different than America. Old culture.
So you moved to Orlando more than 20 years ago, and you're still teaching this kind of mm-hmm. art in the community in Orlando.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
How old are your students? Are they children as well as adults?
I used to do children's classes, uh-huh. but now I've moved into mostly adults and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The kids used to do mostly summer programs. And I work full-time, so I cannot do the kids' program. Yeah. That's the only reason. I got nothing against kids.
What are some other kinds of batik that you've brought with you? What are the other examples of your work that are in the demonstration area? And again, that tent is just, there are other people from other countries who live in Florida in this crafts demonstration tent. Here in the park, just a couple of tents from here.
There are, I have a few other pieces which are very done on Indian theme because they wanted to see those. But just one piece I brought which was a little different. Again, it could be an Indian village. So it's not 100% different. But I do have other pieces that are on Indian theme done very conventional way. So you can come and see them. Come see how I do this. Did you go there? Did I sign your paper? Oh, you gotta get your... Oh, you didn't get
probably.
Papers.
Ah.
Oh, you saw me do that tree thing. Oh, good.
So you've seen her working. Did you ask her some questions there? Do you have a question for her today? You all want to do batik.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
How long did it take for finishing one piece? Very long. It depends. I work on it. If I keep working on it, I probably can finish a piece between 4 to 6 hours this size. But otherwise, if I leave it, a few months.
I believe this young lady in the plaid Mickey Mouse
yeah.
shirt or hat has a question for Ms. Tandon. Where do you
get
the stuff?
I order it. Most of the stuff is ordered. There are companies in California, but I get my silk from India. I used to get all my colors and dyes from India, but it got a little difficult. I have to find a person coming or going. So I get them from California. There's catalogs I can order through. Mm-hmm. It's a fabric dye. You know, they're mixed with some chemicals. You can buy them in art stores, but in the area they don't keep them because it's not really used. So we can order it through catalogs and, you know, bulk supplies. You can get silk here too. You can order silk also, but I get my silk from India. I order for the class. I order the silk from here.
Well, with that, I'd like to say thank you to Ms. Tandon. I urge you to keep looking around the festival. There's all kinds of things here from the Seminole area to the Asian folklife area to all the other stages where there are music. But I hope you'll stick around, because within the next 5 or 10 minutes, I see Ms. Kubota, and we're going to talk about Japanese traditional arts, if you'll give us a chance to do a little switch here on this narrative stage area. But would you girls give Ms. Tandon a round of applause for talking with us
here? Thank you. Thank you. I hope I have helped some people. And I can, you know, if you guys want me to come to your school, I'll come and do this for you. Uh-oh. Why did I say that? Thank you again.
Yes, ma'am, Ms. Tandon. I'm going to, again, plug the Florida Department of State and the Museum of Florida History and Bureau of Historic Preservation, are the organizations we work for. The Park Service is our co-sponsor. I'm going to go off mic and set up Ms. Kubota, who will talk a little bit about Japanese arts. I also see a colleague of mine, and it'll take us just a few minutes off mic, and we'll be back talking about another Asian tradition. But please stick around, and you can speak with us.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Tandon. I really like learning about this. My turn sometime. Ms. Kubota.
Hi.
Hi, am I pronouncing your name correctly? Kubota? And is it Mieko? My name is Brent Tozer. And thank you, Bob.
She said it's hard to do without a
glad you have that.